Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And that debt is fraud. And it is all about compliance of the Constitution. You know, it's now or never, folks. And as we appeal, as we continue our appeal to heaven, we cannot miss our chances. We need to understand what we need to do and what we need to pray for. I mean, shoot, if anything, folks, start praying for a miracle. Because that's about what we're going to need. And so, but you know what? I get caught up in saying, you know, we're running out of time. We're running out of time. It's now or never. And I just don't think that that necessarily resonates very loud. At least I don't see it actually, you know, hitting people. And so, you know, kind of between the eyes or what have you. So what do you say, Tammy? Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
And so what do you say? I mean, you know, am I just over-dramatizing? Wow, it's now or never. I mean, only the Lord knows what time it is, you know, and when this is going to happen. But boy, things are starting to happen quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's now.
Okay. All right. Well, as we get ready to move forward, folks, we're wrapping up the ratification debates. When we get done with this, either I'm going to move forward with Tammy in content, or I'm going to be doing it myself, and I'm hopefully finding somebody else, because Tammy's not going to be here for a little while. And I know I'm going to get probably a lot of hate mail. Boo, you suck. And actually, so you saw, I sent you kind of like one of our latest ratings as far as where we were ranked at that point in time during the show. It's usually towards the beginning of the show. I just look at where we are, and you saw that, right?
I did.
Pretty good,
yeah,
huh?
It's pretty amazing.
Every time we start the show, that's about where we are. We're usually around 4 to 7. I mean, 4 is usually a good spot. And, you know, the worst is maybe 7, and we're usually up in the top 10 for the entire show, which means that's a lot of people streaming. A lot of people streaming.
Yeah, I had no idea. That's amazing.
Yeah, so if you look at it, let me just kind of go through it, because if you actually look at how they, you know, calculate all the different shows out there, right, there's these little buttons at the top or these dots. When you kind of look, you know, they from the left to right, the top left is the top show. And then you start paging to the right. And so that's not just all of the shows, right? What they're showing you is actually the top shows. That right there is either the top 10, top 12, top 14, you know, 5 on the top, 6 on the top, 7, and then equal number down. And then you see the dots. And so if you keep going over, all of those dots are another 12 or 14 shows, right? And so you keep going over, and you keep going over, and you keep going over, and you keep going over. And you're going to see there's well over 100 shows every hour. That means we're ranking that high every day amongst all the 100 plus shows that are out there. That's not bad. That's very good, actually. Very good. So, and I hate, you know, I hate patting myself.
It's not bad. It's very good.
Yeah, I hate patting myself on the back. You see, a lot of these shows, and actually currently, I'm looking at Red State Talk Radio currently, because we're not recording during our show. We do a pre-record when we do this. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So you got 14 times 7. That's how many pages down they are currently for Red State Talk Radio. So it's not like, you know, it's always there. There's, you know, depending on the different show hosts and repeats and what have you, it'll fluctuate. But no, we're doing really good. I'm proud of you. And you know what? I'm proud of you. You make the show because you're the one that's reading it. And I think that sometimes I've actually gotten comments, hey, I really like the way she reeled you in. So, anywho, folks, we're dealing with ex post facto laws. And most people do not understand why ex post facto laws even exist or what they are. And so an ex post facto law, in basic terms, is having something that's legal and then making it illegal and then coming and arresting you because you're practicing something that's illegal now. A good example of that would be you buying property, because this is what's happening throughout the states. You have property. You bought property. You're living on the property. Maybe it was just an investment. You haven't built on it. But you bought it, you know, 4, 5, 10 years, 20 years ago. Doesn't matter when. When you bought it, it was legal for you to have a water pump on that land so that you could, you know, aerate and, you know, water the land and do that type of stuff so that you could, you know, be productive and do things and live on the land. Many states have actually created laws that say you now, if you have land and you don't have a pump on it, then you can't have a pump on it. We've now made it illegal. Well, what that means is that when you bought that and it was legal, they made an ex post facto law to say now your property is worthless. You can't have water on your property. And that's rendered your property useless. It's one thing for them to pass a law and say all transactions that occur after this law has been passed, and if you buy the land and there's not a water pump on it, and or, you know, a permit in the workings or what have you, then, you know, you can't put a water pump on that. You can't have water. That would be an ex post facto law, making it illegal, carte blanche, and basically punishing people who bought property in good faith that they would have these resources available, and then they pull the resource away from you, and you're not even paying attention. And most people, they don't even know that that was an ex post facto law, and that they, you know, kind of come after them. Now, there's some really extreme cases of ex post facto laws, like statutes of limitations and those types of things, because in some cases, states will change the statute of limitations. And by in so doing, they'll shorten them. Let's say you committed a crime and the statute of limitations of the crime you committed was 10 years ago. And then all of a sudden, they make it so that the statute of limitations on those types of crimes are 2 years. Well, that starts on crimes then moving forward. All crimes that were committed under the old statute are still applied to the old statute. Does that make sense now? They can't.
Does this apply to chickens too?
What's that? What's that?
Does this apply to chickens too? If they had a ordinance that said you could have 20 chickens and then they changed it and now it's only 8 and you still have 14?
Well, so maybe. Yes, possibly, but the fact that they're creating a limit, a floor and or a ceiling on what you can have. I mean, so as long as the law is really clear that you can't have chickens for commercial purposes. Commercial means that you're taking these chickens into the market. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't barter with those chickens. Somebody can come along and give you, you know, rabbits, a few rabbits for a few of your chickens, and, you know, a rooster, what have you. But they don't have the ability to actually create thresholds on what it takes for you to sustain your life. That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, oh, well, we don't think you need that many chickens. You can survive on this many. That's not their job. The whole point that we have chickens and the whole point we grow our own food and tend to our own lives is for our own survival. Right?
Right.
Okay. So can they regulate our survival? No, they can't. So they can't come along and try to create these thresholds. Now, 9 times out of 10, it's not even something that's in the Constitution even. So when they start creating these laws down at the county level, well, hold on here. Where did you get that authority to do that? Well, we're the local government. We can do whatever we... No, you can't. And this goes... So this is the positive side of no constitution. You can't do anything unless we've delegated it to you. What? What does that mean? Because right now, at this point in time, we went off and created the state. We failed to actually give you a constitution. So we've never given you any power. We've never told you how to govern us. So you can't do that. And so therefore, your limitation on governing is all based on that state constitution until we actually create the county constitution. And that's when you want to nudge them and say, this is a good idea, creating a county constitution. Doesn't mean we're going to give you that power, but at least we'll now actually own you as our government. We, the people, institute our government. And right now, the way everybody looks at counties, they look at counties as the administrative shill for the bureaucracy, the state, and the federal government.
It's true, yeah.
So, the only way...
Man, I don't see any chickens, any chicken talk in the state constitution of Wyoming. So.
No, yeah. And bottom line, the Ninth Amendment is always the kicker of the Bill of Rights. No enumeration in the Constitution can construe to deny or disparage any other right that's preserved by the people. The right to survival is one of those rights. Anyway, so right. So we're covering ex post facto laws, and this is Mr. Iredell, and he's going through this. So let's go ahead and dive into Mr. Iredell's elucidations on this whole topic.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to this clause, it cannot have the operation contended for. There is nothing in the Constitution which affects our present paper money. It prohibits, for the future, the emitting of any, but it does not interfere with the paper money now actually in circulation in several states. There is an express clause which protects it. It provides... it provides that there shall be no ex post facto law. This would be ex post facto if the construction contended for were right, as has been observed by another gentleman. If a suit were brought against a man in the federal court, an execution should go against his property, I apprehend he would, under this constitution, have a right to pay our paper money, there being nothing in the constitution taking away the validity of it. Every individual in the United States will keep his eye watchfully over those who administer the general government, and no usurpation of power will be acquiesced in it. The possibility of usurping powers ought not to be objected against it. Abuse may happen in any government. The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. This is the case in all free governments in the world. The people will resist if the government usurp powers not delegated to it. We must run the risk of abuse. We must take care to give no more power than is necessary. But having given that, we must submit to the possible dangers arising from it.
So that's pretty powerful, right? Isn't that powerful? The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. Folks, how do you do that? Off the top of your head, how does a person in the United States basically prevent... Or what is the process of basically saying, you can't exercise that power? Now, in the Constitution at this point, there is no enumeration for what I am talking about. That enumeration doesn't come in until the Bill of Rights. Because the process of standing up and saying, you can't do that, you have no authority to do that. That's just like we're talking about chickens and regulating our survival. Right? If it's not in that state constitution, yeah, there's no government in the state that can regulate your survival. Now, the only way you can actually change from the state down to the county is by creating that county constitution, because maybe you want them to have more controls than the state does. That's the whole point. So, when he goes on and says, this is the case in all free governments in the world. The people will resist the government usurping powers not delegated to it. We must run the risk of abuse. Bottom line, the mechanism is the First Amendment right of petition. It's about petitioning our government to hold them accountable. Isn't that the way? It's not going to court. You get a lawyer and go to court, that's just going to cost you money. But you can hold government accountable by using a First Amendment petition, by writing out and articulating the constitutional argument that you don't have the authority to do this. Therefore, you better cease and desist. And you get people to sign it. That's how you get the people to prevent its exercise. Instead of getting bullhorns and going down onto the highway and just blocking traffic. That does nothing. But you hold them accountable and you list their names and go, you are violating your oath of office. You're assuming powers not delegated. That is far more powerful, because in the Constitution, when you prove that they're violating their oath, then what happens? What happens? They're now ineligible to serve. They're supposed to be removed, because the violation of their oath of office while under oath, Section 3 steps in and you're to be removed. That's it. You know, these dots are, you know, they're constantly connected. I mean, we can kind of twist it. It's kind of like that magical thing how, wow, it just stays connected regardless of which way we twist and turn. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. thing. It is a beautiful thing. So keep going then to the next paragraph.
Okay. With respect to the great weight of the northern states, it will not, on a candid examination, appear so great as the gentleman supposes. At present, the regulation of our representation is merely temporary. Whether greater or less, it will hereafter depend on actual population. The extent of this state is very great, almost equal to that of any state in the Union, and our population will probably be in proportion. To the north of Pennsylvania, there are 27 votes. To the south of Pennsylvania, there are 30 votes, leaving Pennsylvania out. Pennsylvania has 8 votes. In the division of what is called the northern and southern interests, Pennsylvania does not appear to be decidedly in either scale. Though there may be a combination of the northern states, it is not certain that the interests of Pennsylvania will coincide with theirs. If at any time she join us, we shall have 38 against 27. Should she be against us, they will have only 35 to 30. There are 2 states in the northward who have, in some respect, a similarity of interest with ourselves. What is the situation of New Jersey? It is in one respect similar to ours. Most of the goods they use come through New York, and they pay for the benefit of New York as we pay for that of Virginia. It is so with Connecticut, so that in every question between importing and non-importing states, we may expect that 2 of the northern states would probably join with North Carolina. It is impossible to destroy altogether this idea of separate interests. But the difference between the state does not appear to me so great as the gentleman imagines. And I beg leave to say that in proportion to the increase of population, the southern states will have greater weight than the northern, as they have such large quantities of land still uncultivated, which is not so much the case to the north. If we should suffer a small temporary inconvenience, we shall be compensated for it by having the weight of population in our favor in future.
Okay, so I have the population right here. And North Carolina is 393 at the time of the Constitution. Now, Virginia is almost 700,000, which means that it's almost double the size Virginia is. And then when you look at the next largest state, that would be Pennsylvania. And then the next largest state would be, or actually those, Pennsylvania is bigger as well. Pennsylvania is 434. And then Massachusetts is almost equal to North Carolina. So here they're talking about, oh, they don't have as much population. Actually, they do. And when I just count the northern states, because let me do that here. I got Delaware. I got Pennsylvania. I got New Jersey. I've got, not Georgia, I won't add Georgia, because that's southern, right? Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maryland, and New Hampshire. Those states right there come to 1,755,000. Now, when I add the southern states, and I go to Carolina, and then I go to, where's North Carolina? There it is right there, these three. Let me see, am I missing any?
Delaware. Oh, yeah, I got Georgia. I've got Carolina. I've got Virginia. Not New York. I forgot to add New York to the other one, so it's even more than that. North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, and Georgia. So those are the four southern states. And that's 1.4, basically 1.4. It's less than 1.4. So the northern states, actually, because there's more of them, they're smaller. So even though they were thinking, because they look at how much land that they've developed, the majority of the land is being used to growing their money. It's growing their food. Up in the north, those are mercantile buildings where people come to work. They live close together. There's more people in a close proximity. So these guys, you know, Iredell was a very smart man, but obviously they didn't know what the numbers were. They were just guessing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So going down further, where's the next one? So I think Gold and Silver by Mr. Archibald.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, taxes must be paid in gold or silver coin and not in imaginary money. As to the subject of taxation, it has been the opinion of many intelligent men that there will be no taxes laid immediately, or, if any, that they will be very inconsiderable. There will be no occasion for it, as proper regulations will raise very large sums of money. We know that Congress will have sufficient power to make such regulations. The moment that that the Constitution is established, Congress will have credit with foreign nations. Our situation being known, they can borrow any sum. It will be better for them to raise any money they want at present by borrowing than by taxation. It is well known that in this country, gold and silver vanish when paper money is made. When we adopt, if ever, gold and silver will again appear in circulation. People will not let their hard money go because they know that paper money cannot repay it. After the war, we had more money in gold and silver in circulation than we have nominal money now. Suppose Congress wished to raise a million of money more than the imposts. Suppose they borrow it. They can easily borrow it in Europe at 4%. The interest of that sum will be but 40,000
pounds.
Pounds. Mm-hmm. So that the people, instead of having the whole 1 million pounds mm-hmm. to pay, will have but 40,000 pounds to pay, which will hardly be felt. The proportion of 40 pounds for this date would be a trifle. In 7 years' time, the people would be able, by only being obliged to pay the interest annually, to save money and pay the whole principal, perhaps afterwards without much difficulty. Congress will not lay a single tax when it is not to the advantage of the people at large. The western lands will also be considerable fired.
Right.
The scale of them will aid the revenue greatly, and we have reason to believe the impost will be productive.
Yep. And I actually, in some of my content that I've been covering, I've actually kind of highlighted that. Now, we'll get down to Mr. Abbott, where we start talking about religion. And this becomes really interesting, because this is where they start talking about Mohammedans. Mohammedans being okay. Muslims. Okay?
Oh, okay. After a short exordium, which was not distinctly heard, proceeded thus. Some are afraid, Mr. Chairman, that should the Constitution be received, they would be deprived of the privilege of worshipping God according to their consciences, which would be taking from them a benefit they enjoy under the present Constitution. They wish to know if their religious and civil liberties be secured under this system, or whether the general government may not make laws infringing their religious liberties. The worthy member of Eddington mentioned sundry political reasons why treaties should be the supreme law of the land.
Okay, so we're going to go into a break right here. So we're going to go into a break right here. So let's take a pause and let's reel this back in, because one of the things when we come back I want to kind of point out, because they didn't really have their religion trotted on or, you know, messed with for over a century. You know, in other words, this concept of the federal government messing with the religious rights of people just didn't happen. So we'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so you're going to get to the point down here where it talks about treaties, right? That they might be able to make a treaty regarding religion. We've already gone through the fact that they cannot make a treaty that is not something that's delegated with their power. So there's nothing in their powers at all respecting religion. Therefore, they can't make a treaty respecting religion. Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, they say they cannot make any laws respecting. So if they go off and try to create a treaty, that would be viewed as a direct violation of not only no power to do it, but a negative power that they can't do it. Excuse me for the squeak. My as you can tell, my voice is very strained. So as we look at the first 100 years, going out from 1789 to 1889, were there real issues regarding religion in America? Well, yeah, there were. But they weren't really the federal government's involvement. Well, actually, there was regarding the Mormons. Technically, when you really think about it, because there was an occupation in Utah, and as a matter of fact, Utah was suppressed from coming into the Union because of their faith. So that happened, and I'm just going to guess after Civil War. After the Civil War, which is 1860s, almost a century went by, the federal government was really not involved in religion at all. And so I'm going, well, hold on here. So why were these people so worried that they were going to do this? Why? Because it was hyperbole. Again and again and again, they were told that if it's not within the delegated powers, they can't meddle with it. And yet, they all kept on saying, well, they're going to do something about that. Well, no, they're not involved in religion. They can't. And yet, even after the Constitution, they created the Bill of Rights that said they can make no law respecting the establishment of or, you know, affecting the freedom of one's worship. And I'm going, they had all of these, and there were still people that kept on wanting to have a biblically based Constitution because they couldn't get beyond the paradigm that itself was the problem. In other words, when you look at Europe and when you look at the ancient era of mankind, one of the greatest and easiest ways we basically fractionalized ourselves was over religion and over doctrine. We even saw it happening in the States. Shoot, Massachusetts gave birth to two other states because they cast out these abominations of, you know, teaching apostasies. The Baptist, and I forget what the other church was. So, I mean, I think it was Connecticut that created the Baptist faith, and I think New Hampshire, they were kicked out for some other, you know, faith. These other different deviations of the Puritan faith. And, you know, so the lack of tolerance was already rearing its head. That's why one of the, I think, Were you with me when I read the Remonstrance on Religion with Madison's Remonstrance? Did you share that with me? You would know if you did, because it was all about religion. So that's when Madison basically said, look, there's nothing more precious for a person than their relationship with their Creator, and how to worship and how to choose to, you know, engage in worship with their Creator. That's nothing more personal than that. And we want to actually start allowing government to control those things? Come on. Haven't we learned a lesson? So anyway, I digress. But as you go through this, they create all these cases. The one thing that I am confident, they did not understand the problem with the Mohammedans. It's not just a faith. It is a law. It is a government. Mohammedan Islam is not just a faith. They have in their pocket how you will live the law of the land. And ergo, when they come here, when they come and they take an oath to support the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic, and then they turn right around and say, now we got to practice our religion. We got to enforce our religion upon you. That right there proves that they have violated their oath. They're placing Sharia law over the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. And they're actually running an insurgency against the Constitution. And I'm appalled at the fact that all of these guys in black robes, guys and gals in black robes, are so imbecilic, they are afraid to say these things. So they kind of talk about this, and the deists and all these other bad people that might actually, you know, get a leg up in America. But Mohammedans never should have been able to come here, never, because they couldn't actually fulfill their oath of office. You know, every time they had their hand up to do the oath, their other hand was behind their back with their fingers crossed, saying, I'm going to support my Sharia law and my Quran, and we're going to invoke our law here. Go ahead and pick up where you left off. Thank you.
All right. It is feared by some people that by the power of making treaties, they might make a treaty engaging with foreign powers to adopt the Roman Catholic religion in the United States, which would prevent the people from worshiping God according to their own consciences. The worthy member from Halifax has in some measure satisfied our mind on this subject, but others may be dissatisfied. Many wish to know what religion shall be established. I believe a majority of the community are Presbyterian. I am, for my part, against any exclusive establishment, but if there were any, I would prefer the Episcopal. The exclusion of religious tests is, by many thought, dangerous and impolitic. They suppose that if there be no religious tests required, pagans, deists, and Mohammedans might obtain offices among us, and that the senators and representatives might all be pagans. Every person employed by the general and state government is to take an oath to support the former. Some are desirous to know how and by whom they are to swear, since no religious tests are required, whether they are to swear by Jupiter, Juno, Minerva, Proserpine, or Pluto. We ought to be suspicious of our liberties. We have felt the effects of oppressive measures and know the happy consequences of being jealous of our rights. I would be glad some gentlemen would endeavor to obviate these objections in order to satisfy the religious art of the society. Could I be convinced that the objections were well-founded, I would then declare my opinion against the Constitution. Mr. Abbott added several other observations, but spoke too low to be heard.
Doggone it. Okay, so so he's really stirring the pot, right? And so the thing is that they actually laid out that you could swear based on your Bible, or you could affirm. Now, an affirm is a legal document that you're basically in front of two witnesses affirming that you will abide by this oath of office. In other words, an affirmation is much stronger than a swearing in the eyes of the common, you know, in society. Because Mm-hmm. When it comes to your actual, you know, I'll just say judgment of failing to, you know, to fulfill that oath, that's between you and the Creator. That comes much later. And most people, I believe we need to hold people accountable quickly, because there's lots of people that are, however you want to call them, they're either, you know, Luciferans or what have you, that they don't care if they're lying. They don't care. And they'll make it so you can never catch them, because they are out for, they believe in receiving the rewards in this life instead of waiting for the reward. And so that's one of the reasons why the affirmation must be critical. We actually going, I never really understood the affirmation until I actually looked at the differences. And that's an immediate thing, because you now actually have witnesses to basically call you out and say, you actually said you would support it, and here's the evidence that you didn't, and you're gone. You don't even have to wait, because all these people that violated their oath, you know, and they swore before their God, you know, they've got to visit that judgment seat. But to hold people accountable now, that's what's important. And actually, Monroe really talked about that, and we kind of highlighted that in the Virginia ratification debates, how this is the first government that's ever actually created an accountability like this. So anyway, let's go ahead and go into Mr. Iredell and religion and so forth. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, nothing is more desirable than to remove the scruples of any gentleman on this interesting subject. Those concerning religion are entitled to particular respect. I did not expect any objection to this particular regulation, which, in my opinion, is calculated to prevent evils of the most pernicious consequences to society. Every person in the least conversant in the history of mankind knows what dreadful mischiefs have been committed by religious persecutions under the color of religious tests. The utmost cruelties have been exercised. Those in power have generally considered all wisdom centered in themselves, that they alone had a right to dictate to the rest of mankind, and that all opposition to their tenets was profane and impious. The consequence of this intolerant spirit had been that each church has in turn set itself up against every other, and persecutions and wars of the most implacable and bloody nature have taken place in every part of the world. America has set an example to mankind to think more modestly and reasonably, that a man may be of different religious sentiments from our own without being a bad member of society. The principles of toleration to the honor of this age are doing away with those errors and prejudices which have so long prevailed even in the most intolerant countries. In the Roman Catholic countries, principles of moderation are adopted which would have been spurned at a century or two ago. I should be sorry to find that examples of toleration are set, even by arbitrary governments, that this country, so impressed with the highest sense of liberty, should adopt principles on the subject that were narrow and illiberal.
Okay, so it's kind of interesting how he kind of, you know, it's like a moment of, I don't want to say pride, but like actualizing, wow, we have reached a higher plane in, you know, in this level of tolerance and respect for one another. That just because somebody thinks differently doesn't mean that they're, you know, at a lesser station than I am. And, you know, and even talks about the piousness of how people, you know, only I, you know, can be the judge, you know, like the Spanish Inquisition and so forth. But anyway, go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. I consider the clause under consideration as one of the strongest proofs that could be adduced that it was the intention of those who formed this system to establish a general religious liberty in America. Were we to judge from the examples of religious tests in other countries, we should be persuaded that they do not answer the purpose for which they are intended. What is the consequence of such in England? In that country, no man can be a member in the House of Commons or hold any office under the crown without taking the sacrament according to the rites of the church. This, in the first instance, must degrade and profane a rite which never ought to be taken but from a sincere principle of devotion. To a man of principles, it has made a mere instrument of civil policy. The intention was to exclude all persons from offices but the members of the Church of England. Yet it is notorious that dissenters qualify themselves for offices in this manner, though they never conform to the Church on any other occasion, and men of no religion at all have no scruple to make use of this qualification. It never was known that a man who had no principle of religion hesitated to perform any rite when it was convenient for his private interest. No test can bind such a one. And therefore, clearly of opinion that such a discrimination would neither be effectual for its own purposes, nor, if it could, ought it by any means to be made. Upon the principle I have stated, I confess the restriction on the power of Congress, and this particular has my hearty approbation. They certainly have no authority to interfere in the establishment of any religion whatsoever, and I am astonished that any gentleman should conceive they have. Is there any power given to Congress in matters of religion? Can they pass a single act to impair our religious liberties? If they could, it would be a just cause of alarm. If they could, sir, no man would have more horror against it than myself. Happily, no sect here is superior to another. As long as this is the case, we shall be free from those persecutions and distractions with which other countries have been torn.
Keep going. I'll sum it up at the end.
If any future Congress should pass an act concerning the religion of the country, it would be an act which they are not authorized to pass by the Constitution and which the people would not obey. Everyone would ask, who authorized the government to pass such an act? Is it not warranted by the Constitution and is barefaced usurpation? The power to make treaties can never be supposed to include a right to establish a foreign religion among ourselves, though it might authorize a toleration of others.
Okay, so he said a mouthful there, and I think what's really critical is he's really laying it out how this concept of creating these religious standards is a very dangerous road to go down. They were wise enough, and I should say, I think the divine hand of providence, I think, really helped stir their heart to recognize that we needed to move towards not a collectivized labor, collectivized religious society, but a tolerant one, accepting people for their differences, as long as they were equal supporters of the Constitution. In other words, we shouldn't worry about the faith of the person standing next to us as long as they are willing to die and fight for individual liberty and individual sovereignty, for everybody to be able to become informed and make their own decisions and choose for themselves. So,
well, and yeah, and he made a good point that you can make somebody swear to a certain church, but if they have no religion, they'll swear to it
right.
and break it. They don't care.
That's absolutely correct. And it happens all the time. And as a matter of fact, we even see that with the Constitution of Mohammedans. They're swearing, mm-hmm. and we know that they can't abide by that. We need to start calling them out and saying, hold on here. Are you supporting Sharia law? Or are you supporting the Constitution and individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that we cannot make laws to subjugate people to not buy pork, to subjugate people to, you know, to calls to prayer, these types of things. Oh, well, Sharia law is the law. Then you've lost your citizenship and we deport you. That's what we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to do. That's what they did to the Tories. Remember, we read the Tories Acts on, January. The very beginning of this year,
mm-hmm.
we covered the Tories Acts, and they ultimately kicked out 100,000 people, took all their property. Sorry, you don't get to keep this property if you can't live in our system. You're welcome to stay here, but you have to live in our system. And this is when people lie and they do what they can, but if we catch them, and when they actually become, defiant, and or they're literally running insurgencies like we see, boom, Bill Gates should be stripped. We should take all of his assets and basically put him in PT shorts and a tank top, put him on a boat and drop him off somewhere. That's it. We're done.
Yeah, I suspect you're the only one with enough courage to say this, because I don't know if I've ever heard anybody else
say that to anybody or sex of people and so forth. That is our precedence. So at the beginning, if you're just a person that's not willing to support and defend the Constitution, you know, you're a conscientious objector, and I'm just not willing to do it. I'm not willing to be a part of that. Then you have a right to not be a citizen, and you know, and you'll lose your citizenship, and you don't have any protections anymore. You can go down, you can scale yourself down to say, I don't want to be the guy that has to hold everybody accountable. I don't want to be held accountable because, you know, I don't care. I just want to grow my food. I don't want to have any part of holding people accountable or in government or what have you, because this is a self-governing system. So those people that want to just become citizens and not, you know, worry about it, then okay, that's fine. But if you're actively working in killing people and trying to subjugate them, trying to change their DNA, then I'm sorry. You've gone way too far. And as a matter of fact, the key here, folks, is that he actually should be charged with crimes. But at a minimum, he should be stripped and kicked out. This is what I say this all the time, and I know you may not hear this, even though this is probably your number one play on in your listening, this show. But I say this all the time, that when, you know, we're holding people accountable, and bottom line, everybody is obligated to have to take up arms to support and defend the Constitution. You're not willing to do that, to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Then you've got to give up your citizenship. And that applies to both men and women today, because Congress has established the standard that it applies to both men and women. So, okay, now that we've got this standard, that means that if you're not willing to do that, then you need to basically step back. You lose your entitlements. In other words, you don't get due process. And, oh, that doesn't mean you have a right to drive a car on our roads. You know, we actually may have to, you know, have an increased cost for you to drive on our roads. Right? I mean, we play way too nice with a lot of these people that are protecting themselves because they're not citizens anymore. And I think the day has come when people are finally going to say, you know what? The reason we're suffering today is because we're not all united, and you folks have gone down a path of just being selfish and protecting yourself instead of stepping in and helping us. You've abandoned us. It's kind of like the abandoned parents, you know, the parents that run away and say, you know, I don't want to be accountable and responsible anymore. I just want to have fun. I don't want to pay taxes anymore. I just want to have fun. Those people are the biggest part of our problem. And I say this all the time. That is our biggest problem. We know the left are our enemies. We know that they are doing everything they can. The ends justify the means. They're doing everything they can to kill us. And they don't even know they're killing themselves. I mean, the funny thing is, they're out there arguing over the environment of some mine putting, you know, some dirt and particulates in the water, when they don't even say a thing about all the heavy metal and toxins that are being sprayed on us every day. They're oblivious to that. They won't even talk about that. Huh. Now, we're being played so badly. And it's the conservatives that are actually failing to, you know, get their heads together and, you know, unite on the Constitution. It's so frustrating. But anyway, we've got another paragraph and a little bit more on Mohammed, so let's go ahead.
Okay. But it is objected that the people of America may perhaps choose representatives who have no religion at all, and that pagans and Mohammedans may be admitted into offices. But how is it possible to exclude any set of them without taking away the principle of religious freedom which we ourselves so warmly contend for?
And right there.
This is the foundation on which...
And right there. So this is what I'm telling you. These guys didn't understand this requirement of supporting the Constitution. This was the beginning of laying it out for the public servants. See, public servants had to support the Constitution. But citizens, they didn't realize that as soon as they opened up Congress and they started creating these acts, Congress ultimately basically laid out the militia acts, that every able-bodied man has to support and defend the Constitution, which means that they're under oath and legal obligation to do so. Duh. So, I mean, these guys didn't see this all laying out, in, you know, just a few steps ahead of them. I mean, we're only talking about 1 year, because I believe the very first act was in the June or something like that, June or July of 1789, and the very first act that they passed was the act of administering the oath. And so this is where it started. They started realizing that if you're going to be a citizen, you got to support the Constitution. You want to partake in the election process, you've got to support the Constitution. We can't allow our enemies to be among us. And all of this started really just laying out in front. And I, as I see this, it was right in front of their nose, but they just didn't see it. They didn't see that this is the direction, that these people really couldn't do this. They couldn't actually come in and penetrate us and, you know, have their fingers crossed and be able to get away with doing things by not supporting the Constitution. It doesn't matter, really, their religious belief. What matters is their legal beliefs and the rule of law. If they want to invoke anything other than the Constitution, these guys didn't know that these guys had that paradigm, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't think that they realize, wow, these guys are going to come in here and try to set up Sharia law. Go ahead and finish. We got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. This is the foundation on which persecution has been raised in every part of the world. The people in power were always right and everybody else wrong. If you admit the least difference, the door to persecution is opened. Nor would it answer the purpose, for the worst part of the excluded sex would comply with the test, and the best men only be kept out of our councils. But it is never to be supposed that the people of America will trust their dearest rights to persons who have no religion at all, or a religion materially different from their own. It would be happy for mankind if religion was permitted to take its own course and lead itself by the excellence of its own doctrines. The divine author of our religion never wished for its support by worldly authority. Has he not said that the gates of hell shall not prevail against it? It made much greater progress for itself than when supported by the greatest authority upon earth.
Now, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke. I mean, that right there just says it all. I think Mr. Iredell at that point just kind of, he connects the ball and it's out of the park. I mean, that, boom, he did it. So with that, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you tomorrow. And folks, we literally ran out of time. And so I'm hoping, I believe, there's no doubt in my mind, that as we go through this, the dots start connecting. We start seeing how, you know, as they move forward, everything is centered on the Constitution, that we must defend and support that Constitution to ensure it protects everybody that wants individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Those that want to subjugate us to statism or Mohammedism, they're out. They're gone. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.